Greetings and good evening, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is October 27, 2017, and fall is definitely in the air here in Nashville. A brisk 40 degrees this morning made getting in the swimming pool just a little more challenging. But the sun is shining and it looks like the day will warm up nicely. Yesterday, I had the good fortune to sit down with my old friend Stuart Clifton. Stuart will be well known to my Nashville listeners. He's been a member of the Metropolitan Council and the member of the Planning Commission here in Nashville. Stuart is a lawyer with a history of service with the Legal Aid Society. He now acts as a lobbyist for certain nonprofit organizations. His activities focus on the Tennessee General Assembly. One of Stuart's clients is an organization called the Tennessee Conservation Voters. The Conservation Voters organization itself is a coalition of other nonprofit groups with an interest in the outdoors and in conservation. I would encourage my listeners to check out their website at tnconservationvoters.org. The website contains a lot of good information, including things that are going on at the legislature, also including a scorecard which rates members of the legislature with respect to their actions about the conservation and the environment. The General Assembly will be coming back into session within the next few weeks. I wanted to sit down with Stuart and review the landscape as far as legislation is concerned that affects conservation. And so, I hope you'll enjoy my interview with Stuart Clifton. Stuart Clifton, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here.
Thanks.
Stuart, I always like to start these chats out with my guests introducing themselves a little bit. Of course, I know that you've been a member of City Council here in Nashville, and you were been on the Planning Commission for many years, but you are now, as a lobbyist, representing the League of Conservation Voters, so that, at least at some level, means that you're interested in conservation.
Right.
How did you get interested in that?
Well, I've thought about that a lot, because I've actually represented, it's Tennessee Conservation Voters, but we are a state member group of the League of Conservation Voters,
right.
But it's TCV, Tennessee Conservation Voters. Okay. And I have been representing the groups for probably close to 15 years now.
Sure.
But it didn't start with that, obviously, and I don't know how far back it goes, but I remember as a freshman, I went to Vanderbilt, and as a freshman, we thought we'd invented the whole environmental movement in those years, in the late 69, 70, and around in
okay.
there. But I actually became...
Well, that's when the Earth Day started and all
Yeah, so that I was part of that generation, and I actually became a member of a group. Back then, people joined groups. Everybody joins groups. Nobody does anymore. But I was part of the Vanderbilt Environment Group. We thought if you joined a group and went to a meeting, you were doing something.
Okay.
So that was good. But we decided to reform the world by recycling in 1970. And Vanderbilt at the time, it's done a lot better, obviously, now. But there was no organized effort to recycle or to do anything environmental. We literally went from dorm room to dorm room picking up papers. We had distributed cardboard boxes. You were supposed to put your recyclable papers out. So for all of a year or two, we would go all over campus to the computer center and everything else and just kind of recycle that paper. And it was quite early in the whole thing. I have no idea, though, exactly what caused me to think that's how I wanted to spend my time, except I had fallen in love with, even by a freshman year, with Tennessee's parks.
Sure.
Seriously, I was in groups that took retreats to Montgomery Bell and all sorts of parks, and that, to this day, is one of our family's main...
Well, you grew up in the Memphis area, is that right?
I did.
And beautiful parks there.
Oh,
certainly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then we moved to Arkansas, which was also fairly nice.
Yeah.
But I've been in Nashville since 69, and I just always had a real soft spot for it. I later got very interested in it from a faith perspective, almost.
Yeah.
I'm actually a member of a group called Tennessee Interfaith Power and Light, which looks at the environment from a faith perspective. It's non-sectarian, but there are issues of stewardship,
sure,
and sustainability. There are almost theological issues.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's been a real interest of mine, personally as well as through my political career. I was on the council for 12 years, and that was a time when we were considering how to deal with solid waste. As you recall, we had it was very revolutionary for its day when Beverly Briley did it, but the incinerator the waste energy facility was not up to par from a health perspective, and there were efforts to expand it. I was part of the initial movement toward establishing curbside and other recycling in Nashville, so it was a natural thing for me to kind of move into, as a lawyer and a representative of mostly nonprofit groups. That's what I do government relations work for, is nonprofit groups. The Conservation Voters became sort of one of my two main clients.
Now, the Conservation Voters is an organization unto its own, but it's also a coalition of various organizations. Who are the groups that are involved?
Well, we've got about 14, I guess, that are dues-paying members, but we are aware that some of the groups we work with haven't quite joined because there's a dues requirement. And we work, just to be honest with you, we work quite often with them just like they were members, frankly.
Right.
So it's everything from land-related groups to specialty groups. We have the Audubon Society. Sierra Club is one of our main members.
Right.
Citizens for Wilderness Planning, based over around in Oak Ridge.
Oak Ridge area.
Parks and Greenways Foundation. Just a whole bunch of them. And the idea was, no one really had enough money to hire a lobbyist. So, you know some of this, I'm sure. But they pooled their money way back before my time and worked hard on a few issues. And frankly, it's been a successful model. We have a very lean staff with one part-time staff member, but a great board. And even though there are other groups that do work on public policy, environmental public policy, there's an increasing number of groups and individuals who are scared to death about the current political scene, the current public policy decisions being made at the national level. So groups that we've never thought of as necessarily policy groups are meeting regularly now, strategizing for the future, thinking about what tools we need, what information we need. So that's.
I want to point people right here at the outset to your website, which has a lot of nice information about your activities. It's TN conservationvoters.org.
Right.
All one word.
Right.
So people check that out.
Right.
And if there is there a phone number or other contact information that people can.
There is. There's a. Email address for one thing, info@tnconservationvoters.org.
Okay.
And then the phone number is 615-269-9090.
Okay.
And
try to repeat that again before we close here today, but I hope that my listeners will check that out, this is an organization that is worthy of support for sure.
Thank you. It also will get you a way to get a scorecard, both a link to a scorecard, but these are actually nice to have in person because they're well done, and we'll mail those out free to people if they ask us through that email address.
Right. The scorecard that he's referring to is published each year at the conclusion of the legislative session, and it kind of sets out the items that the organization has been monitoring or actively pursuing, either as a goal or something maybe to stop from happening. that sometimes is just as important.
The ideal would be to have both, and we do have both.
Right.
I have to say in the last few years it's been a little bit more defensive than offensive, and I wish it would be more balanced, but you do what you can.
Without any further ado, what's on your agenda this year?
We have been working for a long time successfully to establish and maintain dedicated funds to acquire wilderness areas, parkland, strategic areas that relate to water, And that remains a funded part of state government through dedicated funds. But we have tried to expand that because of the great development that's happened in so many places and the great strains on our water system in particular, and the lands that are kind of sensitive and fragile. We've been trying to add to that, and we had a huge effort last year. Ultimately, the legislature, in spite of some great sponsors and working hard, we just got nothing out of it.
So, and that was a budget item.
That was a budget item, and that is not all we do, but the preservation of lands, the what we now call the Forever Green Tennessee movement, is something that's on our mind. We know it's the last year of the governor's administration, and a lot of turnover in the legislature's coming, so we would like to get the attention of our policymakers to add to that. We have a good system. It is not it's not as comprehensive as we'd like, and we'd like to add some state lands, either with one-time funding or an ongoing funding. So that's one item.
And that was had to do with protecting the waterways. So that was kind of the integral element of that.
Well, it's hard to separate, I guess, right, the land and the water.
Exactly.
Because if you're preserving the water, the land around sensitive waterways, and then you're preserving both.
Right.
So one reason we have such tremendous vistas and great state parks is because we have been able to successfully sell it as a water protection thing, and that resonates more with some legislators than others. So that's one of our key priorities every year, trying to expand and at least protecting the funding we have, so that new land can be acquired when it's appropriate. You know, probably a few years ago, there was some great work done to acquire new land on the North Cumberland's area.
Sure.
We have a lot of land that, because of our work and the leadership of Governor Bredesen, and frankly, the current Governor Haslam going along with it, we have recently had a lot of North Cumberland area declared lands unsuitable for mining. And that is in law, and we were not the only group working on that, but that's the kind of thing we try to protect.
All right, let's talk about the mining program. What is on the agenda as far as mine regulation now?
In the last, for many years since the Alexander administration, we have gracefully allowed the federal government to do most of the specific regulating and investigating and implementation of our coal mining regulations. They're federal regulations, but in most states, frankly, the state has to pony up a lot of money and actually get in and do all the regulation. Thanks to Governor Alexander, who for various reasons decided to do this, and he had strong bipartisan support, we basically said to the federal government, you know, you've got expertise, you go do this.
Yeah, I was in the conservation agency.
I thought you were.
At the time that happened. I had just become a member of the staff there. And the surface mining program, regulating program, really was an ugly, ugly thing. I mean, just to be quite honest with you, they were failing miserably at regulating surface mining. Mm-hmm. And it was hard to not come to the conclusion that it was purposeful to their failure. And I think Lamar just wanted to have clean hands about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Now, to be clear, away. It was not the governor who was failing.
No.
It was the entrenched bureaucracy
exactly.
and some of the legislative
entities. Well, they were not staffed adequately to do the job.
So for the last 20-some-odd years, we have not had to worry about that. The federal government has done that. The coal mining industry does not like that. And they have, for the last several years, tried to, under a primacy act, where we would take over primacy, it would be our duty to regulate and fund the various operations of coal mining. That has gotten great support in the legislature.
Okay.
Everybody wanted to do it except people, some environmentalists and some people in cities who, of course, aren't right there, so they had less weight. And I have to say, Governor Haslam has stopped that every time. along with the environmental groups and others, but it didn't seem like a good use of money.
It would have had to have been a huge fiscal load.
A huge fiscal load, and you know, we are a low-tax state, but we like being a low-tax state.
Right.
I have my own doubts about whether we fully fund everything we should, but the finance committees of our House and Senate, along with the governor, have, in spite of a lot of support from legislators from East Tennessee who have been convinced by some of the coal mining lobbyists that this is the salvation of the state, new coal mining. And frankly, we're mined out. It's a sort of an odd thing to be fighting, but we have been winning lately against all-out efforts to try to bring back all regulation to the state, which has a certain political appeal, but financially is not a good idea. So that will be on our plate once again. We've had to fight it each of the last several years, and luckily our side has won.
Okay. Terrific. Let's look at some of the other topics that you've got.
Okay, I will mention a couple of positive ones. Open records might not seem like an environmental issue, but the environmental community has, for many years in Tennessee, been one of the main groups using our very good state open government law, open meetings and open records. So one of our member groups is the League of Women Voters of Tennessee, who are members of Tennessee Conservation Voters. And together we and the Coalition for Open Government have been successfully winning battles at the legislature to safeguard and even improve open government requirements, including a bill last year, which we think might not be under attack, but it might be next year. But we passed a bill with these other groups last year to allow the beginning of an open records request to be done by email, which is how business is operated now. But a lot of local governments wanted to have to take off work, go down in person, and write out your request
to make it more difficult.
Right. And frankly, it became a real interesting battle. You know, the environmental community has friends of both parties and in all segments of both parties, not always at the same time, but a lot of Tea Party conservatives who were trying to get local government information, schools information, other information, were being stymied by various rules of the state, or at least local governments, rather. And we made common cause with them. We don't care what the issue is. The environmental community needs ready access to public records.
So what sort of records would be the subject of this sort of request now?
Well, we have one of the nation's best open records laws, so it's pretty... there are a few specific exceptions. You obviously can't get confidential employee information, but in terms of the complaints that have been filed, in terms of specific minutes of meetings, any number of things that could, as you can imagine, impact environmental regulation, that's all part of the effort that we're trying to keep open. So I don't know all of the details. I just know that it became a bipartisan effort, and passed easily with support from both parties to expand how you can initiate such an effort. That may sound like a small thing, but it was one that we enjoyed because it was some new allies for us.
Excellent.
You know, Tennessee has three parties right now, not two. We have the mainstream Republican Party, sort of the business Republican Party, the Tea Party branch of the Republican Party, and then the Democrats. And frankly, the state has been largely run by the business Republicans, and that's maybe a little oversimplifying, but we make common cause with all three wherever we can. So
development is a major problem in Tennessee, or the regulation of development.
Yes, it is. And that affects water quality a whole lot.
Yeah.
And that's one we have not been successful on as much as we'd like. We've had pretty good local regulation of water and water quality, particularly in the cities. But the development industry and the home building industry have been really angry about that and have successfully changed some laws. And I don't want to get into the specifics of that because, honestly, I'm not a technical expert on that. Luckily, TCB has experts from different groups who are water quality experts and scientists. But all I know is that we've been losing battles the last couple of years to the home builders, who are huge contributors, frankly, to re-election efforts. on what you can put in the waterways and how clean it has to be, and you know, what doing things to the water supply that are really bad when you combine with stormwater problems. So that's one that we haven't been as successful on, although we are making that a priority this year. When I say we, this isn't an effort that, I mean, a legislator in Northeast Tennessee does not really care what I think. So what we do is try to educate and motivate citizens, either just regular citizens or people who are part of groups that we work with. And that's the way we've had successes. But unfortunately, other groups are out there doing the same thing.
Yeah, you're encouraging people who are like-minded to actually speak to their legislators.
Sure, the way everybody does. It's right. Just that we don't have major funding to do that. And there are some deep pockets on the other side of some of our issues, and that makes it hard. But if you don't mind, I'll just jump in and say, people might think it sounds very overly optimistic to think you can do that these days, because there's so much ill will about government. People think, social media is full of anger on all sides. And so people kind of wonder when you start explaining that, yes, you too can have a difference. What have you been drinking? But the fact is, going back, and you were involved in state government a good number of years ago, but for every year from that time on, diligent effort and smart effort has always been reasonably successful.
Yes.
It sounds very Pollyannish, but it's all about three things. Developing good relationships with legislators, because they're not going to trust you if they don't know you, and if they've never heard of you, particularly if you have no constituents in their district. And contacting the legislators with brief but important, accurate information, and then holding them accountable.
Right.
I mean, that's not rocket science, but it works for the environmental community just as well as it works for the business community.
Yeah, it's important if you see the fellow that represents you or the woman that represents you at the beauty salon or the hair or the barbershop, that you speak up and you talk about about conservation. I think for many years, the talk was that people didn't vote the issue of conservation, that they carried this around, but when they made a choice about which lever to pull for which candidate, conservation didn't factor in. And I think legislators have to learn that it does factor in.
Right. And I have to say that there are very few legislators for whom environmental interests would be at the top of their list based on why they ran or who they hear from. So it's our job to make that clear to them. Most of them don't come in with deeply held views either way. They're happy to hear from constituents. They're happy to hear from interest groups who it can make a case and make it accurately. So we win some bills. I can give you an example. We have a new senator, relatively new senator in Nashville, Steve Dickerson, who's a Republican, and he didn't run as an environmentalist. He's been in now about 5 years.
He's a physician.
He's a physician.
Yeah.
Although he did go to Swanee, so he knows what it's like to have a great...
to be out in the woods.
Exactly. But we met with him, the environmental community and the League of Women Voters, and explained some of our issues, and he's been frankly a steadfast supporter. Our scorecard, and he's done that not because he started out as an environmentalist, but he has people in his district who have logically made the case to him on the need for protecting the waterways and everything else. So when people have a chance to see this scorecard, they will see that we're bipartisan, but that he's one of those that voted right more than most.
You know, Stuart, as I looked at the scorecard, one of the impressions I had was how creative, let's call it the other side of this equation, can be in crafting things that are detrimental to the to the cause. One was providing that the Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agency would pay to local governments in lieu of taxes fee.
Right.
And I see that was defeated.
It was defeated. And actually, some of the people who were for that on other environmental issues have been our friends. And it points out that, it's not always black and white. It would have been very devastating for that bill to have passed for our wildlife areas, particularly in East Tennessee. But a lot of those areas had a disproportionate number of acres in protection.
Right.
And not a lot of jobs.
So what this is for folks that may not know what we're talking about. So if you're in Sevier County, half of Sevier County is the Great Smoky Mountains National Park.
And you don't get much tax
money
from
that. They don't pay any local taxes. Now, the Park Service does pay some in lieu of taxes. Yeah. And some of the other federal agencies do. But to my knowledge, none of the state government agencies have been able
to. So it's a tax-based problem, you know, to run your government. So there needs to be a solution to that, but it's not what was proposed. And I was very happy to see the legislature do
that. Well, you know, I think that local governments need to realize that these having these entities there provide other economic benefits, you know, other than taxes. So.
And, you know, one thing that's happened in the last few years has been the establishment of a sportsman and fisherman caucus of the legislature.
Okay. I was unaware of that.
And they are all about protecting the land for hunting and fishing.
Right.
And actually, the Tennessee Wildlife Federation, which is a nonprofit, works very closely with us. That hasn't always been the case, but they work very closely with
Tennessee Conservation.
That used to be the Conservation League.
Yes.
Is that
what you're talking about? And this is a new name.
Right.
Which is good, since the Conservation League and Conservation Voters would look pretty similar.
Sure, sure.
We changed our name a few years ago, too. So they are very zealous in their support of TWRA and of protecting the lands, because it's a major thing. It's a major hobby. It's a major pastime to hunt and fish. And they have generally won on those. And that also is a very bipartisan group, led by a very conservative Republican who might not vote for increased regulation in Washington, but he cares about protecting our wildlife areas.
Exactly.
So,
So what else is on the agenda?
Well, I did want to mention a very timely issue, probably controversial, is transit.
Okay.
It's not an issue everywhere, but it obviously is in Nashville. And I'm not here to talk about the pros and cons of the specific transit proposal that's going to be before the voters of Nashville, but it was a state effort to give local authorities the right to put something on the ballot, and that was a major part of Governor Haslam's road plan, his transportation plan, the Improve Act.
Okay.
And one reason that passed ultimately was it didn't just provide money for more roads, it also provided a possibility for this kind of referendum to allow money to be raised by local governments for transit. And whether you like all the details or even know all the details of the mayor's proposed plan, that's only on the ballot because the legislature passed a bill that had transit generally as part of it.
Right.
And frankly, we were for that being part of it because from a sustainability standpoint, there are places where transit is going to be needed.
The solution can't be more roads because there's just no room for roads.
Whether it's a specific plan here or there, that's for more discussion than we have time for today.
Right.
But that's that. I don't think that will be revisited. But that was a pretty important piece of legislation, and one reason it ultimately passed, because it had the majority of Republicans in the House against it at one point. But one reason it finally passed was it did have some nod of potential transit for cities. And that we'll see what happens. I don't think there'll be any change to that, but that would be something we're looking out for next year to see if that changes. Because it's for us and Sierra Club and many of our other member groups, it's a sustainability issue that in Davidson County, where we could talk for a long time about density and traffic, the good news is we have, over the last 20 years, preserved through greenways expansion and parks expansion, and even some actions to turn back major developments, such as the Maytown development a few years ago, which would have created a second downtown.
Bell's Bend.
That was defeated by the Planning Commission and not pursued by the council. with the understanding that that would probably mean that some other areas would be more dense than they are now. So it's a complicated issue, but one that will be more and more in the future, particularly for cities, is how do you have sustainable practices without making lifestyles choices that are hard for everyone.
Excellent.
So I don't know if that makes sense or not.
It does.
It'll
it
be
does.
An interesting one to look at. I wanted to at least tip my hat to the people in the state legislature who did score the best. Is that an appropriate
Certainly.
Use of our time?
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're doing a scorecard the way we do. It's not easy because not everybody has the same opportunity to shine. Because the way we do it, we grade positive and negative votes. But if you're not on the right committees, our legislators don't see a lot of environmental bills because they get stopped in committee. So with the knowledge, with the caution that just because someone is not at the top of this list doesn't make them a bad environmentalist, but it does mean that the names of legislators who had the highest ranking are probably worth mentioning. And senators were Dickerson, Harper, Harris, and Kyle.
Okay.
Interestingly, all from urban counties,
okay.
Shelby and Davidson. And the representatives who scored the best compared to their peers were John Ray Clemens, Brenda Gilmore, Antonio Parkinson, Mike Stewart, and Johnny Turner. Every single one of those, because of how the math worked out, came from one of the two largest counties in the state, where, coincidentally or not, we have strong environmental groups.
Right.
So I thought I'd mention that. It's not a battle that every legislator wants to get involved in to protect the environment, but we have some good friends in both parties who are willing to do that.
You know, historically, there's been an urban and rural sort of divide in our legislature. And one of those issues that comes to mind is the farmland regulation of effluent, let's call it, from farm fields. The worst example that I remember was the pig farmer upstream from Cumberland Mountain State Park swimming beach,
right?
And occasionally would dump his the effluent from the pig farm into the creek. What's going on along those lines to regulate farmers a little bit, or is there anything going on?
Well, the farmers, as you know, are pretty powerful,
yeah,
and many times very good in the environment. You know, we have some great agricultural conservation programs still in the state,
right.
But they actually have made progress on efforts that we oppose, dealing with factory farms,
okay.
For instance, poultry, pork, whatever.
Sure.
And they have taken away the state's ability to regulate through the Department of Environment and Conservation some of those concentrated animal feeding operations,
right.
The CAFOs. It just passed as Public Chapter 293. There's a slight delay in its implementation, so the legislature could come back and change it if they wanted to. I'm not the expert on exactly what it does, but it makes it harder for the state to regulate. So it was a real defeat for us and a real victory for people who are not as careful as we would like about what they put in our waterways.
It's always been hard to regulate,
yeah.
I guess it's going to be an increment more difficult.
An interesting point that you would appreciate is this is one where the State Department of Environment and Conservation, the state officials, the bureaucrats, if you will, lost out to the farming interest. They were not for this bill that passed, nor was the environmental community, and we both lost to the
right.
to the interest of organized farming,
right.
who are often our friends, but not on this issue.
Right. Well, then there was in the same vein, there was some movement to regulate clear cutting of timber
years ago
for the same basic reason of the effect of on the watershed.
Right.
That has never gone anywhere.
No, and it's not even talked about much anymore. Back in the late 90s, this was a huge issue, and the state feels like that it's regulated enough to where they don't need to prohibit clear cutting in certain areas. I don't think we're clear cutting in parts,
yeah.
Of course, but there's a feeling that the the clear cutting is not good for the environment, even outside of that. But that's one that we never did win, even several years ago, when the environmental sensibilities of the legislators, to some degree, were higher than they are now.
Right.
So.
Well, Stuart, what is there anything else we need to mention that's going on that people need to know about?
I don't think there's a lot. I mean, there's for people in Tennessee, there are all sorts of organized groups who care about the environment, who can get good information. We're among those. We're not the only one. But I'd like to close on a note of optimism, because I have never seen the environmental community and just regular citizens quite so worried about steps away from protecting the environment. There's a lot of motivation out there. There are groups like ours that are gearing up and putting some time and money into making it easier for citizens to know how to access the public issues, how to impact the public issues. So on that score, this is a good time. There's a lot of people who are willing to help you look at issues. I would urge people to look at our website and see the other groups that are part of our organization, and get on as many email list distributions,
exactly,
and maybe
exactly,
even social media. We're not the only, I don't want people to get the idea that we're the only environmental group. There's a lot.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Thank you for bringing that element up in this conversation, because we are about to embark on a year-long race for the governor's office.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that are running for governor have identified themselves at this point. Some of those people I know, and others I don't. Mm-hmm. Some I know are avid environmental or conservation friendly people. Others are not. We don't want to advocate particular candidates here.
Right.
But it's important for people to become aware of what these candidates stand for, and for people to let these candidates know that this is an important issue too.
Right. And while we don't want to do that, I mean, there is a Conservation Action PAC that's associated with Tennessee Conservation Voters. They haven't met yet to talk about those issues.
But Political Action Committee.
But C3s and even C4s don't need to be endorsing candidates, of
right,
course. But that doesn't mean that citizens don't need to be involved,
exactly,
in campaigns. They need to look at what people say on their websites, what they say with just the simplest of searches. You can find out a whole lot more than you ever could. And try to support people who really care about conservation issues and environmental issues. And that goes not just for governor's races, but U.S. Senate races and legislative races.
Yeah, if you go to a public meeting, ask a question about conservation and the environment of
right,
the candidate.
Right.
Because it likely will be the only time he or she will be asked that question.
True.
That's how we let people know that this is an important thing.
Right.
Well, Stuart, thank you so much for joining us today. Again, people, if you're wanting to get in contact with Stuart and his organization here with the Tennessee Conservation Voters, it's tnconservationvoters.org.
Right.
Thank you, Stuart.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you, Mark.